Hello and welcome to the Six Nations Review podcast. It is week three of the competition and we are all back. I am Park Kelly. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all the social medias on the second row. That is 2ND, not the word second. I'm joined again this week by Eilva O'Nuaillean. Eilva, how are you? How's your week going?
Good, yeah, really well. Delighted it's Monday again.
And where can everyone find you on the socials?
We're on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. So if you just look up Irish Women's Rugby Supporters Club, you shall find us there.
And again with us is Claire Malloy. How are you, Claire? Any match this weekend?
I'm good, thank you. Yes, match on Friday night. Friday night, that's us finish up for the season, which I'm not going to lie, I'm very, very ready and glad for it to be a little bit of a break now.
And where can everyone get you on social media?
You just normal Twitter, Claire Malloy on Twitter. That's usually really the only place I would talk about rugby. Everything else is not that interesting.
And to round out our crew is Fiona Halligan, who was meant to be with us last week, but life got in the way, I know. So Fiona, how are you? And tell everyone about yourself.
Thanks, Farrick. Nice to meet you all. I'm in a master's in sports journalism at the moment with 3 weeks left in college. So it's into the big bad world, and hopefully then after that. And I suppose that's mainly it for me. And my socials then is very awkward. It's CH2.
I've known Fiona for years. She knows more about rugby than most people forget. So she's been very, very bashful, like, I'm only just doing a sports master's. So she knows her stuff and is well placed to talk about rugby. So we'll get cracking straight into the news. It's a lot shorter news this week. We had like 2 weeks built up last week, but this week we'll start with the Women's Six Nations Under 18 Festival started. It's nice to have finally an underage Women's Six Nations.
Yeah, it's great. I think, it's fabulous to see that there's an extra step in the pathway there. I know I was really pleased to see as well when the squad was announced. It's not, you know, particularly centric to Dublin or Cork or Belfast or anywhere like that. There's a lot of talent from around the country. So, yeah, great to see.
Fantastic just to see. And to be promoted as well. You never really see it being highlighted sort of as well, which is fantastic.
And Fiona, like, how important are the results? Or are we just kind of going, look, it's the first time anything above playing is actually a victory there?
I don't think we need to look too much about the results. It's getting the team out there, getting them to know each other and find their way in the competition. Absolutely brilliant that there is a competition for under 18 because there's a huge step there. So it's great that they're bridging that gap there.
And it's one of the key things that review will show is that the lack of an international underage structure is being a part of the Irish 15's downfall. So it is an important step. And because if you look at the men's game, it brings up so much talent.
Oh yeah, massively. I know, sort of personally speaking from our club, we have no youth girls team. Sort of the senior levels really would be the only level that there would be, but there's youth boys and there's under 14s, under 16s and everything like that. So having something highlighted at an under 18 level for young girls is fantastic, and hopefully get more girls that age interested.
Yeah, I think it's really important to give them something to reach for. I think, you know, a lot of them just play in clubs. I know there's a lot of difficulty in kind of the club domestic structure for under 18s in terms of getting consistent games, because often there are players unavailable. I don't know, there's leaving cert or social lives or other commitments, and, you know, the getting games, a lot has to be cancelled. Teams have to amalgamate on a day just to play a match, that kind of thing. But, you know, it's definitely going to drive a lot of people to stay in the sport, I'd hope. You know, they think that maybe one day I can pull on a green shirt. That's, you know, that's invaluable to teams like that. I know I certainly love the opportunity to see a whole bunch of names and just kind of follow them and track them and see where they go. You know, do they play for the province? Do they go further and play for their senior team's country? I've always done it with the under 20s. You see the likes of Craig Casey 2 years ago, and now there he is playing for Munster in Ireland. It's great to kind of be able to track these players and kind of feel like a part of their journey. Mm-hmm. Do yourself a favor, actually. Pick a year, like 2012, under 26 nation side, and look at the names. It's brilliant to see how many of the players come through and you know, and go through the academies and into the provinces and into the international side. It's absolute dream to read.
I just gonna say it's just funny when you said that. I had to look up a couple of James Crombie pictures for an assignment we were doing in college. I couldn't believe some of the baby faces of our international senior team now at under 20 level. I was like, that cannot be him. So yeah, like it's unbelievable. Like five of them are currently with the senior team now. It was just unbelievable to look back over the last couple of years on them.
Because I remember the under 18s festival a couple of years ago, because that's where Baby Parsons came into the spotlight as a superstar and at interprovincial level. So having now an international level for those is just the next step. And I think if we look at like the next steps and where rugby's going internationally, sadly we have to have another conversation about a poor structure. This time it's the Black Ferns, who seem to have been, from the outside looking in a couple of years ago, the beacon of where women's rugby was going, seem to have the same challenges, if not worse, than that Ireland have been dealing with.
Absolutely, yeah. I think one thing that's apparent to me is that a lot of the problems that Ireland face, it's not unique to us, you know. You know, we don't hear of much controversies coming out of the RFU in England either, but I'm sure they've dealt with the same issues. Just hopefully dealt with them a bit sooner than a lot of the other unions have. It's a pity. It seems to be something that's quite common across a lot of unions.
What was really odd is that step up to semi-professional actually seemed to cause more problems than it solved, especially in how the sport was run over there.
Yeah, I mean, I know Alice Soper talks a lot about that and how the commitment to semi-professional sport isn't really a commitment. And England faced the same thing where players were made professional or semi-professional, but they're only made semi-professional for a very short amount of time. They're only given a very small amount of money. I mean, like, I think I heard that the Welsh players who got contracts are on £24,000 sterling. That's not a lot to live on. And it's a case of, for some people, it's a case of giving up a better paying career to be able to do that. Some people, it's a case that they can't live on it. So, I mean, when we hear about teams going semi-professional or professional, it all sounds well and good. And people think, oh, my God, they're probably on 100K a year now. They're not. And it's not fully supporting. It's not as good as it sounds on paper. And I think a lot of that is what they experienced in New Zealand. It was very short-term commitment, the very small amount. And they, like us, they don't have a great... and they've had so many of the similar issues to us in that the union hasn't really backed and hasn't really built a competition that's very supportive. There are some players who didn't play for 2 years and went into an international game. 2 years because of COVID, they didn't have a single game, whether it was domestic or, you know, higher ranks, anything like that. So, yeah, it all sounds well and good, but it's not quite what it's built up to be. The problems still persist despite the semi-professional or professional status.
What jumped out at me is that report came out for the Black Ferns and everyone still has a job. That just wouldn't happen, say, over here, would it, Fiona?
No, definitely not. There has to be some sort of accountability when a report like this comes out. Like, you have to see basically someone's head rolling because they haven't done their job right. And if that was in any other job, they would be gone. Like, I know from past experience, like, we've always had performance reviews, and if you don't perform well, then you don't do well in the job. Like, you know, there's a certain level you have to hit. If you don't hit it, you're gone, basically. So, like, someone's head has to roll for that. Like, you know, they're not doing their job, they're not putting in place what needs to be put in place. And just the semi-professional thing, it's just like, right, we'll give them semi-professional contracts, might shut them up a little bit. That's what it sounds like, you know, instead of going in the whole hog and saying, right, we're going to do this, going to do it right and make everyone professional, give them decent money, give decent wages, put in place everything that they need health-wise, whether it be gyms, fitness regimes, nutritionists, psychologists, whatever it is they need. Because otherwise it's not going to work and they're just going to keep going around in circles with the same issues over and over again, unless they put these structures in place. And unfortunately, as we're saying here, it's not just New Zealand or Ireland, it seems to be in other places as well. And unless someone's head rolls, it kind of doesn't force the change. In Ireland, like, Eddie was given the heave-ho fairly quickly, like, you know, after that report, even though we don't know the full ins and outs of it. But like at least something was done and structures are being put in place now, hopefully.
I think on that point of, you know, wanting heads to roll, I think it's important to clarify that, you know, when we talk about that, it is necessary, but it's not about wanting somebody to lose their job. It's about, like you said, accountability. And it's about, you know, there are people who are obstacles to the progression of the women's game, or who are actively harming it, or harming players, or, you know, all of these awful things. They can't be allowed to continue to do that. If you leave those impediments in place and you leave those sources of harm in place, you're doing an absolute disservice. And I think, you know, some of the stuff that's come out of New Zealand is particularly bad. You know, abusive stuff, or what sounds like alleged abuse. You know, there's a duty of care to players in that respect. You have to protect people. So, you know, it's not about just, okay, something bad's happened, give them the heave-ho. It's about protecting people. It's about protecting the integrity of the sport, the integrity of the union. And the fact, like you said, Warwick, that people just are just, you know, not even being given a slap on the wrist by the sounds of it. That's just not good enough at all.
For New Zealand especially, they view themselves as these beacons of rugby. And when you look at what England are doing off the pitch and Wales are doing off the pitch, we'll talk about that game now, because I think if we get into a negative spiral, we'll actually be able to enjoy the rugby that we actually saw this weekend. So, well, not that I'm trying to move everyone on, but it's just, let's keep, it's more, when you look at what those countries are doing and they're putting the right structures in place, everyone's catching up. And if they don't do it right, like New Zealand clearly hadn't, because there's some of that stuff was purely abusive. Some of the stuff that was, like I was reading, was like a toxic environment. Mm-hmm. And you kind of, I can't fathom that people still have those jobs that are creating that environment. You do need to work within the system, but you need to also change the system when it's just not working. And talk about a system that is working. Like, we will move on to the rugby. It's England. They are a juggernaut and there is no stopping them. Claire, what did you think of this game?
England, for me, I don't think there's anybody going to stop them. As much as France are fantastic, I think the Grand Slam's in for the ticking for England. I do want to say I hope Abby is okay. Obviously, I think we all heard about what happened to her, and I hope, wish for a speedy recovery and that she gets back as soon as she physically can. But England's just, to me, England's in a different league at the minute. England's maul, their defence, everything just seems to be working so, so well for them. And there doesn't seem to be a team that's scratching the surface of where the England women are at the minute. They just seem to be on a whole different level. We sort of look at Wales the last couple of weeks, and Wales have stepped up as well, and Wales sort of put on a good show. But the England team just, no, I can't say walked over them because that's not the right term, but they just worked so well, blended so, so well together, dominant in every single shape and form that you could have thought about.
Yeah, I think England are doing like a really good job in terms of rugby intelligence. They have so many strings to their bow. It's like they anticipate what another team is going to do before they've even thought of doing it. Or if they come across a team, like, you know, was it 19-0 at halftime? So they're kind of going, oh, you know, we haven't got the bonus point by halftime. This is unheard of. But they think on their feet, they go into the dressing room, they problem solve, and out they go, and they just, you know, steamroll from that point. They're incredibly well prepared, not just in terms of the practice on the pitch, but clearly there's, you know, significant analysis going on. They're learning the ins and outs of their opposition, and they're learning that if the opposition do this, we do that. If the opposition do another thing, we do plan B, plan C, plan D. They have, you know, they don't have one or two ideas. They have an answer to everything, and it's frightening to see. But I suppose it's all the contact hours that they have. They have the hours to put in day after day and analyzing everything, refining everything, learning what the solutions are to a problem that may or may not arise. It's amazing to see.
Like, I do want to say, Wales actually were relatively on top until that Abby Dow injury. I do think that just seemed to stymie that fast start that they needed to have against England. It's the first time the Six Nations have had one. Fiona, how big is that? Because I know you've been on sidelines. How big can that be for a team when they're playing well and something like that outside of anyone's control just breaks their momentum?
Yeah, it can be massive, and it can it'd be 50-50 who it affects the most. Like, you would think it'd affect the team who the player is playing with. Like, you would think England would be affected most, but it can often be the opposition, especially the people who are involved in the tackle. They're the ones that are, they come out worse than it, like, because they feel not responsible, but kind of, they feel a little bit guilty maybe or something. That's not the right word. Like there's nothing that anyone could have done with that tackle. It looked pretty innocuous to me, just from the angles that I saw. Yeah, it just totally broke Wales and their momentum, and it was such a long period of time, which was absolutely necessary for the player. They had to do what they had to do to make sure it was safe to get her off. Like, I think I counted 9 people working on her at one stage. Like, that's a lot of people, and like, she was clearly in a lot of pain because they even had the bump in her hand and the mask on. Like, usually it's the green whistle, so when you see things like that, you know it's really bad. And yeah, like you said earlier, Kerry, just wish her the speedy recovery. I think she's having surgery on it, on a broken leg. Like, so that's going to take a while to recover, and hopefully it's not as bad as it sounded. Like, to hear a player scream like that, you know straight away, it's bad. Like, and the referee, in fairness to her, was quick enough to respond, which can be which is brilliant, because sometimes their slow response can slow down the treatment of the player. So fair play to the referee as well. But yeah, no, it definitely disrupted Wales, and it gelled an already great England team together even more. Just hope she has a speedy recovery from that injury.
Like, the big thing you take from England from that game was their ability to go up through the gears. Like, they started slow. I think that break gave them a second chance to kind of regather, because Wales were imposed themselves. But once they started going up through the gears, there's just this inevitability about them scoring tries.
Yeah, and my prime example of that was Alex Matthews' try. Just her strength, everything that she needed. They just don't stop. There's nothing really that's holding them back or stopping them. And as you says, when they get into first gear, they're in, and there's no back foot for them at all.
No, and like, I like, my main takeaway from Wales is they were looking to play, but they don't have the forwards currently to challenge England. Like, they're not earning that right to go wide. It's an old adage for a reason. But England's biggest challenger this Six Nations is France. You're saying, Claire, but 28-8 against Scotland is not the victory they would have wanted going into the break of the Six Nations.
No, especially when you look at the stats in the Scotland-France game. Scotland had more possession than anything, which is baffling, I think, more than anything. But sort of my take from the Scotland-France game is just, for the first maybe 10-15 minutes, Scotland seemed to play continuously in their own half. They didn't seem to kick the ball out, didn't really take the chance to get out of their half, and which is something France do. France kick fantastically well. I mean, what was the first try? Was the chip and chase?
Sansus is pretty much a magician. That was a lovely try.
Mm-hmm. That was just like plain rude. That was. Yeah. It was just phenomenal. Like, it was followed a period of play where it was just kind of kick tennis. It's back and forth, and they're both trying to size each other up. They're both trying to get their forwards into a position that they could kind of try and, I suppose, identify a weakness, and just back and forth, and Sansus just went, right, I'll sort this. And she did. I mean, just the chip, the gather, and just made it look easy. And it almost did seem like her kind of just going, you know, this is an act of protest. I'll show you how it's done. She's just phenomenal. She's a very typical French scrum half, though, isn't she?
She controls the game very well for them.
Of a creative scrum half. Yeah, absolutely. Fabulous to watch. Claire, what you touched on there with the stats is very interesting, that Scotland had so much possession, and they were really good at keeping the ball, but they weren't really good at a huge amount with it. And I think that certainly needs to be the game plan for anybody playing France, is that you can't kick to them too much. I think we did try to kick to them a lot. They want to kick back. You know, they're going to punish you when they're given the ball in space. And I think when it comes to playing against France, just keep the ball off them. you will slow them down. Of course, England will identify that. England will keep the ball and will hammer at them. And I reckon England will probably, you know, run riot in the second half again. They'll go into the dressing rooms, go, how do we clock up more scores against France? They did over the weekend against Wales. And I think we're going to see an England dominant side. But given those stats, it's quite clear how to play against them. Keep the ball from them.
Fiona, if you're a Scottish fan now, put your head in the blue jersey for a second. You win the second half 5-0 against that French team. You're kind of happy. You're kind of not like you've lost the game, but you actually controlled France for 40 minutes.
You're kind of happy, but you're frustrated at the lack of creativity they had to try and even break down the French. Like, they got 8 points against them, like, but that could have been way more with the stats there. The fact that they couldn't get out of their own half would be a bit worrying. Like, it's always good to have things to work on, but to have that much possession and not to make any gains on it is worrying as a Scotland fan. But yeah, good second half for them, that they did win the second half. But was it that France had the bonus point by halftime? Did they think they had the job done? I'd be happy but frustrated as a Scotland supporter. That's where I would sit.
Yeah, I saw a tweet from a Scotland supporter earlier that was quite frustrated, and he made a good point in that he was saying in the first game, they only used four of their subs. In the second game, they used four of their subs, but they didn't do it until the last few minutes. He seemed frustrated about the lack of depth that was there, that there just wasn't. Like, Wales have done phenomenally well, and Greg Williams touched upon it, and you see it from England as well, that they have this phenomenal bench to come on, and they have depth in all the positions. France have the same too. Like, Ndiaye, who is just a phenomenal rugby player, didn't have to play in some of the games. You know, she's surplus to requirements sometimes. Then she comes on and she pulls out a performance out of the bag. That's incredible. There's a lot of teams lacking that depth, and I think, you know, Scotland do seem to with their use of the bench or the lack thereof.
Scotland's lack of depth is an issue for them, all right, but it was nice to actually see us use our full bench for the first time this tournament. 29-8 victory over Italy, finally a win, and it was great to see the team perform so well and with such good spirit, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. There seems to be a kind of a bit of cohesion coming in there now, which I think we've definitely lacked over the last two games. I know we spoke last time about it being, you know, individual performances being good, but as a whole, just not quite gelling and not quite clicking. I think it's starting to do that. And I think when we have the opportunity to play a bit of rugby and to get a bit of space and a bit of time on the ball, you know, we move that ball so well at the weekend. And, you know, we involved our wingers. I think every probably second or third phase, all we heard was Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe. You know, she was on the ball so much. And it's something we've lacked with previous administrations, the ability to get the ball to the wings that often, where we have, let's face it, we have probably the best threats on the pitch out there between Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe and Baveen Parsons. You know, those are serious threats if they get a sniff of space or a chance to fend off a tackle, they're in. And it was great to see there is that cohesion coming in. There is that strategy kind of starting to work for us. So, yeah, I might have danced around the sitting room a little bit.
It was great to see just even the set piece improve. You can actually tell John Fogarty had been in with the team. There was just this fluidity in the line out from the run to the jump. There was, if you remember week one and week two, Ireland had a very bad habit of pausing before we jump, and made us much easier to read, where this was very much more fluid, more active. And the scrum, winning scrum penalties, it's a forward's dream for me to see that happen.
Penalty try.
That's the gold. That's the gold.
It is.
Fiona, for me, and I'm going to pick on her for a second because she is very good, it wasn't Baveen Parsons' best game in the world. You could tell she's almost forcing things.
No, definitely wasn't one of her best games. Yeah, you're right. She probably is trying too hard to get back to a place where she was before. I don't know, is it that she hasn't had enough game time or what it is with sure she just has a dip with happens to players, but I think she needs to just take a step back and just let herself build into a game, because the more she forces it, the more frustrated she's going to get, and the harder it is for her to get back to that level that we know that she has. Like, you know, she is amazing. Like, and she just needs to give herself maybe a little break and just take a deep breath and just step back and say, right, do the basics right, and everything else then will follow suit. Yeah, definitely not her best game. And then Amy Lee Crowe, Murphy Crowe, then on the other hand, is just, she's just stepping up every game. Like, she's just unreal. And I know that's probably a bit of pressure on Baby as well there, that she's playing so well and she feels, right, I need to be at that level, but she just needs to give herself time, and it will come back, because she has it in her.
I wonder, Fiona Coughlin made an interesting comment on comms during the game. They were talking about Dorothy Wall and how Dorothy Wall came into the side for her first year and was just, I don't know, her was an incredible player, young player, so confident and willing to carry, and that she's, I think the phrase that Fiona Coughlin used was kind of second season syndrome. But like, I think a lot of that is A, our expectations be high as fans, but B, I think opposition are reading these, you know, here are the threats, here's who we need to identify and shut down. Dorothy Wall is definitely one of them, because she picks from the back of a ruck and creates so much damage, you know, in the tight spaces. And Baving Parsons, they couldn't give her a centimetre, because she would punish them for it. So I think she was very much managed by the opposition in that respect. And I think that probably lends very well to Amy Murphy Crowe, because where there isn't space on one side, there is on the other. And she definitely got to capitalise on a lot of that. Fiona, would you think that might be an element of it? Or what would your opinion be on it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because that first season, like, when you come in and everything just goes your way, like, you know, you kind of nearly expect it to keep happening. But like, dips happen. Like, players have to learn how to deal with those dips and how to pull themselves back out. And she definitely was well marshalled on the other day. And Amy Lee Murphy Crowe made the most of it. Like, as you said, if one side is shut down, more space on the other side. And she more than made up for that. Like, now, next week, Amy Lee is going to be the one to watch out for, because Baving wasn't as prominent this week. So we might see a different Baving Parsons next week, with not as many people marshalling her, or keeping an eye on her, and she has the space next week. So it's swings and roundabouts with who they marshal. But yeah, she just needs to give herself time, and it will come back. Like, but second season syndrome is definitely something that players do go through. So much hype from everyone. It isn't easy, especially for someone so young. And now she's been pulled away to the sevens, like, so maybe that's in the back of her mind as well. Like, you know, she's to keep two different game plans in her head.
Absolutely. And coming back from injury as well, it's probably the impact there as well. A lot going on for her, I think.
That's the worst thing about coming back from injury, is that you force it, and it's trying to stop a player from forcing it. That's the hard part. It's if you just get them in that frame of mind, right, you know, you just do the basics, you do them right, you get the feel for everything again. And once you get the feel for it, everything else comes back. But it's when they force it, that's really hard to manage.
Would
you worry, like, with the likes of, say, we'll take Sam Monaghan, who's having a great tournament, that Irish press, and I'll include us because we're very bad for it, are kind of going heaping praise to a point where the pressure that they are on when they're playing is just almost too much to live up to. You look at the pack, they're all some individual players, but eventually they're going to have, you know, not great games, not bad games, but they don't have great games. How much of is it, do we have to tailor our expectations to these players' growth?
Yeah, you see, that's it. Everyone, I think, especially for Parsons, because she did have, like, her first season was absolutely fantastic. So everybody's now got that in their head that that's the hype that she lives up to, and that's, she has to perform to that level every single week. It's not sustainable. It's not physically possible to keep at that pace every week. As you spoke about, oppositions are going to they're going to mark you. They're going to know, right, well, this is what she does. Give her a bit of space and you're dust, basically. As us Irish, we are pessimists in some sense. So when someone does have a relatively not bad week, but just not as high as they had previously been playing, we go all in and we're like, oh, well, what's happened? Why are they not performing well? Why are they not doing this? And, you know, it's not until you sort of sit back and you think, and you look at the sort of, I always think you look at the small details of what they do. It's that like one wee pass that just went perfectly to hand. It led to maybe a couple of phases out to try. And you think to yourself, it's little things like that that people don't see properly. We're all guilty for it. We all pick apart the worst in sort of players at times, but it is the little things that are noticeable as well, I think, at especially at professional level.
So that's me putting it with yeah. Leave off being a person.
I think we search for big moments in games, mm-hmm. and if a player that we're used to having those big moments, if we don't see it, we kind of go, oh, they're off the boil. But
yeah.
Like, I think, Claire, you really touched on a great point, is that the little things that they do that we don't really see as much of, like people, including ourselves, going on about Emily Murphy-Crowe this week. She had a great game when she had the ball in hand, but when she didn't have the ball in hand and she was defending, she was amazing. She yeah. was so good at reading, you know. There was moments when she was left kind of with an overlap. She didn't have, you know, the outside centre coming out to her quick enough, or she was kind of isolated a little bit at times, and she just shepherded them towards the line and then bang, out they go. And she managed that so well. And it's, you know, there's less of that we see as the bigger moments. We'd like to see ball in hand. We'd like to see people attacking the line. We like to see the steps, the chips, you know, all of these kind of things. But it's sometimes it's the graft that we don't really kind of celebrate as much. And I think I'm a bit of a purist when it comes to rugby. I love the graft. I love players who graft. Hannah O'Connor, like, was a prime example of that this week. She did a lot in attack that was really good, but defensively, again, she was phenomenal. You know, so many turnovers, so many big hits. Adele McMahon as well, I think she made 20 tackles in the game, and she was phenomenal defensively. You know, it's those kind of players that I really love. You know, they're just the grafters. They'll give you everything. They create a platform for other players to play off. And there's that old adage of, forwards decide who wins a game, backs decide by how much. And that's because these players who graft for you, who, you know, give you clean ball out of the ruck or off a set piece, they're the ones that give a platform for the likes of Parsons and Emily Murphy-Crowe to just flourish in. They create the space, taking the big hits in midfield, stretch a defence, and out it goes around the side. Yeah, I think it's, you know, we focus maybe too much on a lot of the big moments without seeing the graft of the game, but yeah, that's the purist in me. I look at that element of it so much.
It was nice to see this Irish team tactically be a lot better this week. I think kicking from hand was a lot better, but like it goes without saying, Ireland played the elements better than Italy, and we played into and with that wind a whole lot better than Italy. Fiona, is it just an Irish thing, or do you think that was just a mentality change from the previous weeks?
With any new coach, it's going to take time, especially if he's trying to change the way you play. And I think they got the chance for it to come to fruition on Saturday. It just definitely, they played with the wind much better than Italy. I would expect an Irish team to play the wind well, and we get a lot of it. I think they gelled an awful lot better this week together. They played with great cohesion, and you can see what Greg is trying to get them to do. And it takes time for a new system to be embedded in a team, especially when you don't have a huge amount of time with them. Like, you know, it's not like a club where you have them for a year. It's a short space of time. It's starting to show. There's still a lot to do. The wind, it's hard to tell how bad it was. But if it was anything like what we had around here, like, you was going one minute and another the next. So that's hard to judge, especially if you're not used to wind. So we seem to do a really good job at that. Stacey Flood did some amazing kicking.
I noted her kicks over the last three games. She only kicked twice against Wales, four times against France, and then 17 kicks against Italy. So there's clearly a sea change in allowing her to kick or her wanting to kick more. It was really good to see. Well, I think the kick that everyone's going to be talking about is the one that led to Eve Higgins' try, isn't it, Claire? It's the...
Oh, perfectly. Perfect. I honestly think I've watched it about 10 times. I keep replaying it going, oh, it couldn't get any better. It was just, the kick was perfectly timed. Everything about it was just, oh, it was just perfect. And she says, what a change from what, kicking 2 times, 4 times to 17. That's massive, massive difference. And it paid off massively. Is she getting more space to kick with it? Like, did she maybe not get that previously? Or has she just decided this week, no, you know what, with the wind, with everything going on, I'm going to take the shot, I'm going to take the kick and go hope for the best. And with the Higgins kick, it paid off massively, absolutely massively.
So there's a big thing in New Zealand rugby called running to kick, and it's when you're 12 kicks more often. And I think Ireland's strategy is kicking from 12. So when you're 12 is kicking, because they're usually on the ball on the run, the pendulum defense or the winger has to come up. So there's a lot more kick space to find. And I think by having someone like Flood who can kick from 12, it allows Ireland to find those spaces. And she has the ability to do it. The big worry for Ireland is our 4 or 5 best players are all going to disappear in 2 weeks' time, and we won't have them for the final 2 rounds. So you're talking Flood, Parsons, Higgins, Amy Murphy-Crow, Mulhall, like 5 starters being whipped out of the team.
On occasion, you could argue that they're 5 of our better players. Certainly, they're you know, some of the biggest threats in the loose. Be disappointing to see that that's going to happen. I think it's going to get a lot of bad press when it does happen. If we go out and beat Scotland, I think we come out of this competition looking better than we thought we would after the first 2 rounds. But I think that really jeopardizes our chance to beat Scotland by losing all of those players. It's really disappointing. Like, I think a huge part of what happened with Ireland versus Italy was Flood and her game management, was Murphy-Crow. Mulhall had a great game at 15 as well. She was a great threat coming into the line. I think we're losing a lot of our edge, I suppose, both positionally and just in terms of a threat. We're losing a lot. That, do we have the depth? We don't really know, do we have the depth? We haven't seen other players really coming into those positions. I know Enya Breen has been coming in a little bit, but yeah, we haven't really given a lot of game time to alternatives to these players. Flood went in at 12 very much as an experiment. She's proven that she's very, very good in that position. And the experiment, you'd want to build on that. You'd want to keep going. You'd want to build the relationship between the likes of Cronin on her inside and Higgins on her outside. But we're gonna lose both our centres. We're going to lose all of our starting back three. It's decimating our backs. It's certainly frightening me going into the Scotland game, where we could really come out of the competition looking good, or we could come out of the competition with a win, a single win.
Like, for me, I'm going to be honest, I wasn't expecting the single win going into this tournament. I would not have been surprised if we've got the wooden spoon this year. So to get the one win is great. And to be playing Scotland with one arm tied behind your back, the game that you're most likely to win out the next two, really is frustrating. And to not see even the next wave coming, even as subs, is a bit worrying, isn't it, Claire?
Oh yeah, massively. Is it going to be, I think in that sense, it's going to be mentality of right backs against the wall, you know, going in underdogs thinking you've nothing really to lose by just throwing everything kitchen sink at it, you know, hoping and praying for the best. And it is a chance to show what the other girls, not the starting girls, can do as well on a big stage, on a big tournament, and thinking it's given other opportunities. Because I think, what was it? I heard Niamh Jones has played 80 minutes of every match, or maybe 70 minutes of most matches, and it's given the bench an opportunity to come in as well to see what can be done, to see if anything that they're going to bring to change, attack, defence, anything.
There's a lot to work on there, isn't there, Fiona, for Ireland depth-wise, and we are going into the next round blind.
Yeah, like, they knew this was going to happen, And I know that they had to get the wins, in especially like when the chance was there against Italy. But it does kind of make you think, should they maybe have gone with players that they're going to have to use for the rest of the season? It's a hard one. Like, you can't leave those players off the pitch. But yes, they're not going to be there when we need them in 2 weeks' time. It's a huge chance for the others, though, for whoever's coming in for them. It's massive. A massive opportunity for them. And they need to take that with both hands. They need to grab it. And they need to say, look, we're the ones that are here, or we're going to, you know, we're going to make leave our mark. It's not going to be easy for them. As he said, it's going to be back against the wall. But the fact that we aren't giving them game time is very worrying. But in the lead up, and then expect them to play a full game in 2 weeks' time, that's very worrying. It's something that maybe we should have foreseen a bit, and maybe made more changes on against Italy and given them more game time. Especially kind of when we were comfortable, we should have just said, right, give them more game time, get them used to that level. It's a huge, huge step up, especially for anyone that hasn't played at it at that level before. But is the pressure off them a bit because we know what's coming? I don't know. Maybe, but when we knew this was going to happen, we should have been planning for it.
Yeah, I think we should definitely plan for it. But the one thing that comes to mind is, if there's any group of players that can pull out something unexpected, I think it's this group. Yeah. We've done it before in the past with a very different team, granted. But do you remember, was it 2017 or 2018? We played France at home in Energia Park. And mid of the Six Nations, it wasn't planned. There was, I think, three players. It was Tyrrell, Seniniopu, and I can't remember who else, were just suddenly drafted into the seven side, hop on a plane, off you go, you're going to Vegas for a sevens competition. And it was right before the French game. The French game was seen as a critical game. France were on the up and up and were definitely a stronger side than us at that point. We all kind of went, it's not going to happen. But the team just gelled together. This wasn't the face of adversity, in the face of such a big challenge. They really grouped together and they pulled out a win, and it was an emphatic win. They kind of just said, listen, we're going to win in spite of the organisation and the dilution between sevens and 15s. We're going to win in spite of that. We're going to pull it out of the bag. And the players that came in that had, again, very little game time, I don't know how they did it. They stepped up. They slot in, and they obviously had a very good game plan going into it. So, I mean, I think there's a chance that there could be, you know, a huge performance out of them, huge performance to kind of say, in spite of all that, we're really good. Does that help the situation going on long term? You know, if they put out a massive win, do the organisers of the women's setup kind of go, oh, see, there's no problem with putting sevens out. There's no problem with kind of this lack of depth.
It feels, in a development, if you're thinking that the Scotland match is a must-win, Fiona, it's almost better that we're playing England first, isn't it?
I've seen some references to say that they're going to be gone for the last game, and some that they're going to be gone for both of the games. So I don't think it's clear. I have a feeling it is both of the games. So, I mean, that puts us on a huge back foot. I think it's going to be really difficult, though. Like, if they were coming in, if we were looking for depth, I suppose, in that last game, we could probably pull it out of the bag and in sort of a shock. But imagine coming in, having not played in a green jersey this year, and then you have to play England. I'd just be saying no thanks and having the jersey on the next person.
No. It's a lot easier to come in against Scotland than it is to come in against England.
Yeah,
you know, it's two very different games. Like, that's what, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 brand new players. Like, that's a lot.
There'll be a lot of pressure on Nicole Cronin's shoulders, won't there, Claire?
Oh, massive. Just the amount that'll be expected. And if it doesn't work out and if it doesn't go right, then, as we spoke about earlier, is it going to be a Southern session? Is, oh, well, this didn't work because this, and this should have worked because of this. But at the end of the day, Ireland aren't going to win the Six Nations. There's nothing really to stop them just going out and thinking, right, okay, you know, we'll try things that we might not have been able to try if we were in it. They're in obviously a competitive sense, but in a competitive sense, in the sense that they're gonna get the cup or they're gonna win something. So now might just be the chance for them to just say, right, well, the things that we've been practicing and we've been training for, we'll go and we'll try it for England. Like, what really is there to lose at this stage for Ireland? If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. New faces, new players, try it. It is, and I think a lot of the new girls that'll come in will see this as, well, obviously a massive, massive opportunity for them, but will grab it with both hands and think, you know what, I'll prove people wrong and I'll prove that I can be the player that everybody talks about. I can be the Emily Murphy Crowe. I can be the Ben Parson of the group as well. So I do think it's obviously going to be a tough match, no matter if we had the full starting 15 or if we didn't. It was always going to be a tough game. Now I think a lot of the young heads will come in and just think, well, whatever, we'll go for it and see.
You'd have to think that Conte would now be back at fullback as well, Fiona. So there will be, like, Nicole obviously has to take that pressure on at 10, but having the experience of Emer coming in from 15 might be able to fill some of that, what Flood was doing at 12.
Yeah, because Flood definitely helps Cronin against Italy. So, like, we know that Emer can kick as well. There is a lot of pressure on Cronin, though, for the England game. So hopefully, like, Emer will be able to step up and give her the support that she needs. But the thing is, like, with the new backline that we're going to have, is they'll have no fear. So playing players that have no fear can be dangerous for the opposition as well, like, because they've nothing to lose, they've everything to gain. So, like, this is the perfect opportunity for them, and they're getting to play like the best. And everybody wants to play the best, so this is their shot to go out there, play, have fun, enjoy the game, and to the best that they can, and do their best against, like, the team that are going to win out the Six Nations, it looks like. And they learn a lot from that game, depending on, like, how the results go. They're going to learn more from that game than they will learn from that Italy game or any other game.
That's very true. Yeah. And I think one of those that I expect to come in on the wing is Aoife Doyle. She's a Railway player, again, another very young player. And having seen her play for Railway, there was one game that was televised at the end of the season there, and I attended a game early on in October, I think. And she's a little bit of a live wire. She can run around people, through people, over people, even though she's tiny. You know, she's one of those players that kind of can play an unpredictable game, and I think she's somebody who could come in and just really surprise her. And like Fiona and Claire, like you're saying, she could relish this opportunity. She could go into the England game, she could learn, you know, as much as possible on the steepest learning curve you can ever experience, and bring it into the Scotland game, she could really do something. I think my only fear for somebody who hasn't played games yet at an international level is coming into and either not being there fitness wise and not being able to keep that level for an entire game, or, you know, God forbid, any injury that would happen. Hopefully it comes good. Hopefully we see that, you know, that response by these players kind of going, here's my chance, and taking it both hands.
Yeah, round four is going to be either very tight across two games, I do see an England win, or so we'll look at the first game. We'll do a quick call. Who do you think is going to take it, Wales or France? Fiona, we'll start with you.
I'm going to go with Wales in that game. I just think if they learn anything from Scotland game, is to keep possession and actually do something with it, they could take France, especially at home.
Italy hosts Scotland, Claire. What do you think? Who's going to come out on top on that one?
I think Scotland. I think it'll be close. I do think it'll be a really, really close match. Italy really, really like to play sort of fastball, try to keep the ball alive as much as possible. Don't know if Scotland will be able to keep up with that, but I do think it'll be Scotland by, I'm going to say about 10. I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say 10.
Ava, I'm giving you the easy one at the end there, England.
Ireland by 30. England will get 6 players sent off in the first 10 minutes. I think it's kind of a foregone conclusion. I think it's an opportunity to test out different things. It's an opportunity to see really where we stand. It could well be a cricket score for all we know. I think that's everybody's expectations. And I think that's, you know, I think it's right to expect that. It's okay to expect that. And we'll just see where we go. Fiona, I definitely agree with you about Wales. I think they're going to shock us a little bit. And, you know, their conservative brand of rugby, I think, is going to be really, really hard to play against. So I'd love to see Wales win against France.
Well, thank you three for joining me tonight. We'll be back again in 2 weeks, hopefully, and we will be talking about an England loss, a Welsh win, and an Italian win, all going well. So until then, follow us, subscribe to The Second Row on your podcast channels, wherever you are, and that way you'll get this the night before I put up on Twitter. So thanks again for joining me. Talk to you again soon, and good luck, everyone.
Thanks all.
Thanks. Bye.